I'm going to start off at the beginning, chronologically speaking. I'm going to start off with Bhikshu Jagadish Kashyap. I don't know how many of you have heard his name before, so I'll just repeat it. Bhikshu Jagadish Kashyap. Kashyap G, as he was usually called, G being an honorific suffix, was Indian. He was in fact a Bihari, Bihar being that province or that state in India in which Buddha Gaya, where the Buddha was enlightened, is situated. He used to talk to me a bit about his earlier life, his ancestry. He came of respectable peasant or small land holding stock, and seems to have been a rather religious-minded youth. Of course, he was born as a Hindu. He was born into what's known as the Kayastha caste in Bihar. And while he was still in his teens, he joined a Hindu organization, a sort of Hindu reform organization called the Arya Samaj, founded by Swami Dayananda Saraswati in the last century. This particular Samaj, this organization, was opposed to image worship, not very much in favor of the caste system, and strongly emphasized Vedic as opposed to Puranic Hinduism. Anyway, Kashyap joined the Arya Samaj, became a Hindu sannyasi, and embarked upon the study of the Vedas, the most sacred scriptures of the Hindus. The Rig Veda, Sama Veda, the Jura Veda, and the Tharva Veda. He embarked on their study because these were the texts which the Arya Samaj so strongly emphasized, and all Hindus believed that the Vedas were the foundation of their faith and their practice, contained all possible mysteries. Modern Hindus often believe that the formula for the manufacture of the atom bomb is to be found in the Vedas. So Kashyap was very excited and very thrilled to be able to embark on the study of the Vedas. And of course he had to learn Sanskrit, including Vedic Sanskrit, which is rather different from classical Sanskrit. But he was very disillusioned. He didn't find any wisdom, he told me. He didn't find any philosophy. He found hymns to this god, that god, especially hymns to Indra. They seemed a sort of thunder god. Rather quarrelsome, rather fond of fighting, rather fond of soma juice, often getting drunk, not a very edifying sort of god. He found all sorts of rituals described, all sorts of chants. He found all sorts of magic spells, especially in the Atharva Veda, to destroy your enemies and attract love. And he thought, well, where is the sublime philosophy that I was promised? So he used to say to me subsequently that the best way of weaning a Hindu away from Hinduism is to get them to study the Vedas, eh? Because normally they're not studied. You very, very rarely find even a Brahmin who possesses a copy of the Vedas. They're very rare indeed. Eh? You usually find the Vedas in the libraries of scholars in the West. You didn't find them in India. Anyway, to cut a rather long story short, he did become very disillusioned with the Vedas, with the Arya Samaj, with Hinduism, so he started exploring other faiths, Sikhism, Jainism, then Buddhism. And when he came upon Buddhism, which, don't forget, had been virtually dead in India for hundreds upon hundreds of years, he decided that this was the faith, this was the religion for him. He went to Sri Lanka, he became a bhikkhu there, he studied Pali at the Vidyalankara Piravena, which was an institute of higher learning for Buddhist monks, and became in fact a Tripitakacharya. That is to say, he studied the whole of the Pali canon in the original Pali language. In the Royal Thai edition, this is some 45 volumes. Kashyap had studied them all, and was therefore eventually granted this title. But though he had studied the the Tripitaka in Pali in Sri Lanka, though he'd become a bhikkhu there, he did not in fact have a very high opinion of the Sri Lankan bhikkhu sangha. And he used to tell me some rather amusing stories which rather illustrated their approach to the Dharma, even their formalism. I remember him telling me once that, I should explain that in Sri Lanka, among the bhikkhus, there are various sects. The three main sects are the Shama Nikaya, the Amarpura Nikaya, the Ramaniya Nikaya. So how do you tell them apart? They dress a little differently. The Ramaniya Nikaya and the Amarapura Nikaya bhikkhus, when they go out of the monastery, they cover both shoulders with their robes. The Shama Nikaya people do not. They leave the right shoulder bare. And there's a difference of umbrellas, I might add, while I'm on the subject. Shama Nikaya bhikkhus carry a black umbrella. Ramaniya Nikaya bhikkhus carry a Burmese style parasol type umbrella because they originated in Burma. The Amarapura Nikaya, because they're very strict, they make do with a big plantain leaf. In this way you can tell them apart. So it's very important apparently in Sri Lanka to know which Nikaya a bhikkhu belongs to. And bhikkhus especially like to know which Nikaya or sect of the Sangha another bhikkhu whom they happen to meet belongs to. So Kashyapji was always being asked this question when he travelled around in Sri Lanka. Which Nikaya do you belong to? So Kashyapji, who had after all coming to Buddhism from the outside, who was not a Sri Lankan, used to say, Nikaya? I belong to Buddha Nikaya. So that didn't satisfy them at all. So they used to probe a little, and they used to ask him, he told me, well, when you go out, when you leave the monastery, do you cover one shoulder, or do you cover two? So Kashyap used to say, well, when it's hot, I cover two shoulders. When it's very hot, I cover only one. And they said, when it's very, very hot, I don't cover either. So he could not be caught. And he used to tell me other stories too. He told me that one day, you know, he was giving a lecture. He was invited to give a lecture on the Anatta doctrine, the doctrine of no self, as it's usually translated. And he started off by saying that you couldn't understand what was meant by Anatta, or non-self, or no-self, unless you first of all understood what was meant by Atta, or self. So at that moment, as soon as he said that, various Sri Lankan bhikkhus got to their feet and shouted, we don't want any of that Hindu philosophy here. Kashyap tried to explain he wasn't preaching Hindu philosophy, he was only trying to clarify the concept of Anatta, but they would not accept it. They actually shouted him down, they forced him to resume his seat. So he used to tell me stories like this, and at the end, as I believe I've related in Thousand and Petal Lotus, he said to me, because as you know, the Pali Tripitaka, Pali scriptures, were admittedly preserved in Sri Lanka by the Sri Lankan bhikkhus, but he said, Sangharakshita, this is how I used to talk, Sangharakshita, those Sinhalese bhikkhus, they are a set of monkeys. Sitting on a treasure, the value of which they do not understand. This is what he said. And he also told me one of those little stories about the laity to illustrate their attitude. And he said one day that he was going for alms. He was begging, you know, with his begging bowl. And he was quite a new monk, a new bhikkhu. And he couldn't keep his robe up, you know, it kept slipping down. And if you'd worn the robe for about 5 or 6 years, you know, it always keeps slipping down. But in some sort of miraculous way, when you've been in the robes for 5 or 6 years, the robe just stays up. And believe it or not, but this is my own experience, if you are a monk of some experience and standing, you can actually do a prostration and your robe won't fall off. Well, if I had my robes with me here in America, I could demonstrate. But anyway, Kashyapji found his robe slipping down. So what did he do? He had his begging bowl in his hand, so he just
put it to one side on the ground
while he adjusted his rope. An old woman saw him doing this and at once started screaming. Okay? What sort of bhikkhu is this from India? He doesn't even know how to respect his bowl. He's ignorant of the Vinaya, because there's an obscure Vinaya rule which says bhikkhus mustn't put their baking pot on the ground. So the old woman knew that somehow, and she was screaming at him and abusing him for being a bad bhikkhu. He heard something about bad bhikkhus a little earlier on. So, anyway, this was Kashyapji's experience, or some of his experience of Sri Lanka. Anyway, he left Sri Lanka, and for a while he was in Penang with Chinese Buddhists, staying in a Chinese Buddhist temple. And he was, of course, a Theravadin. He was deeply versed in the Pali scriptures and a convinced Theravadin, but not a narrow-minded one, quite a liberal-minded one. But nonetheless, at this time, which was about 15 years before I met him, he wasn't quite so liberal-minded, this is his own account, as he afterwards became. And he said, what happened was this, and this is the story he related to me personally. He used to visit Chinese Buddhist temples, that is to say, Mahayana Buddhist temples, with his Chinese friends. And they used to bow down to the Buddha image, bow down to Kuan Yin, that is to say, Avalokiteshvara, bow down to all the other bodhisattvas. Kashyapji, however, being a good Theravadin, he only bowed down to the Buddha, and he ignored the bodhisattvas. So his friend, who accompanied him to the temples, didn't say anything. But that day, when they got back to the house, lunch was served, Kashyapji found he'd only been given rice. So he didn't really like to say anything, but nonetheless he sort of looked at the rice, looked at his friend, and after a while he said, where are the curries? So the friend said, well, the rice is the main thing. He said it's just like that with the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Admittedly, yes, the Buddha is the main thing, but the Bodhisattvas are also necessary. Yeah? So, yes, rice is the same thing. Curries are also necessary. So as Kashyapji said, he learned his lesson. Because he was someone who could take a point, and he said whenever he went to the Mahayana temples thereafter, he bowed down to the Bodhisattvas too.